So the above four authors have no relationships to disclose. Today we're going to present to you the evaluation of a comprehensive therapeutic early childhood center. Our clinic has provided parent-child therapeutic treatments in order to address social, emotional, and behavioral problems in a population of a high-risk urban population located in the Bronx, New York, for over 30 years. We began this initiative to better document the efficacy of our services for our funders as we improve clinical outcome services for patients and children. Today we'll tell you how we designed, implemented our evaluation, as well as the lessons learned. Epidemiological evidence suggests that there is an increased prevalence of social, emotional, and behavioral issues, as well as an increase in preschool termination that leads to lack of academic readiness. These occur most often in impoverished populations. There are also lifelong physical effects of risk factors. High levels of stress hormones impairs brain development that results in health issues. These occur most often, I'm sorry. The good news is that parent-child therapy offsets these risk factors in vulnerable populations. The American Academy of Pediatrics states that healthy early childhood social, emotional, and development is essential for educational readiness, social well-being, and preventative mental health. The early childhood services that we provide include parent-child psychosocial therapeutic services, which include individual and group therapies, as well as comprehensive case management. Our consultative and screening services in our outreach programs identify and prevent potential developmental issues. We have outreach in pediatric clinics, preschools, as well as the child welfare system. Our clients come to our attention through other child-serving systems that present with social, emotional, behavioral, and developmental issues. They include children from birth to 5 years old. 98% of them are Medicaid recipients. 62% are Hispanic, Latino, 26% are African American, and 8% are reported as others. Of that population, 35% are known to the child welfare system. And again, we're located in the Bronx, New York, and the American Community Survey names this the poorest urban county in the country. Our stakeholders that we considered before planning included local, state, and federal governments, as well as private foundations, as well as administration under the umbrella clinic that we operate, and various individual clinical faculty research projects and caregivers that we serve. Our participants, as you can see, come from various disciplines that include licensed psychologists, social workers, child development specialists, psychiatrists, therapy assistants, administrative professionals, and trainees.
So as Christina told you, the Early Childhood Center had already been in existence and treating children for over 30 years. And so we went to start this evaluation initiative in 2007. We really wanted to evaluate kind of the care as usual. So our clinicians were using various components of evidence-based practices, but nothing was systematized across treating clinicians, and everyone used a variety of different measures. So some of the strategies we used was that our evaluation was completely internal and participatory. So led by our director and evaluation personnel, our clinicians actually came up with the measures and identified various clinical goals that they wanted to see measured. This approach was completely integrated within all the services and processes that were already in place in the clinic. And this integrated approach really allowed us to be very time and resource friendly. It only took one research coordinator to kind of coordinate and run all of this, and everything else just happened on a daily basis. We also made sure ensured that all of our data collection and all of our measures were were not burdensome at all to our caregivers or would infringe upon clinical time, given that this was a high-risk population. We didn't want to take away anything from their therapeutic services, and we wanted to be sure that all of our measures were standardized in our populations that we served and were culturally sensitive and competent.
Here we wanted to highlight some tools that we use to measure outcomes to our clinic. So we listed for you our goals and what we use to measure these goals. So an example of a standardized measure of behavioral symptomatology, we use the child behavior checklist. An example of a screening tool that we use to measure developmental delay, we used the ages and stages. And other outcomes included clinical record observations, such as monitoring involvement with other systems, such as school enrollment and child protective service report. We used a web-based design called to collect our data called Efforts to Outcomes. This began in 2007. The system was affordable and customizable to collect our data. It became an unofficial electronic medical record that began recording all our clinical services. This included clinicians entering complete demographic data on a daily basis, as well as clinical surveys. As well as clinical surveys on patient factors and progress reports. The clinicians also recorded a daily clinic effort, such as referrals, phone calls, and therapy sessions, also on a daily basis. We piloted this evaluation with a small group of clinicians and family members, and then we implemented the services on a daily basis and followed up at semi-annual treatment intervals.
So how did we do at this evaluation? We serve approximately 500 children per year and an additional couple thousand in our outreach programs per year. So since 2007, we were able to collect data on 1,200 parent-child dyads, and those dyads had varying levels of measurement according to what program services they received and their length of treatment. We are also able to record approximately 2,500 to 3,000 different consultative and screening outcomes in our outreach program. We looked at our follow-up rates, and it was approximately 60% at each subsequent time interval, starting from intake to 6 months to 12 months on and on till termination. We did a sub-analysis of these children, and most we missed just due to the fact that they left our therapy services or dropped out before they met their subsequent follow-up interval. Some had aged out of our age range, although we serve clients from 0 to 5. If we can't find an appropriate referral source somewhere else, we do keep them a bit longer, and some aged out of our measures. So it was approximately 18% that we did miss that we were supposed to follow up with. Some positive outcomes and things that really helped us within this evaluation was that we were finally able to accurately describe our population and the risk factors of this population. We knew that our population was very needy and high risk, but we were never able to justify to funders exactly how needy our families were. And given that we receive referrals from all different child serving systems with a variety of diagnoses, we're able to describe the specific service delivery components that each child was receiving in order to do further analyses as to what is most effective with which type of presentation in a child. Because we chose measures with all of that had clinical value, clinicians were on board from the very start. They were very enticed to actually deliver the measures to their families because it added clinical value, it improved their quality of services overall. They were able, for example, on our ages and stages questionnaire, we had the parents interact and understand more about development, and everything was very interactive. This clinical value also translated to some research efforts in which individual staff members that were going after small research grants or student research interests, we were able to provide them with data and just overall improve some of our outcomes within our treatment. Also, from the beginning, we were able to really anticipate all further stakeholder and funding questions, and so funding and stakeholder reporting just became a lot easier. There's a lot of data to show, but just to show you one or two examples, in order to document our risks, we used the DSM-IV AXIS for psychosocial and environmental risk factor list. This was the most extensive list that we could find, and the clinicians were already utilizing it, and so we had them begin recording it. And as you can see here, 96% of our kids were exposed to at least one significant psychosocial risk that was contributing to their mental health and developmental needs. As for the other measures we shared with you previously, we were able to document change over the various follow-up intervals. And then we were also able to break this down to different subpopulations, such as children with severe developmental delays, children whose mothers were severely depressed, or children in foster care to report to funders in various levels. This is just one example of how we used our outcome measures to analyze more at this level. And this slide shows you the behavioral improvement as measured by the child behavior checklist, and just an example from intake to 6 months. We broke this down into kids with the highest number of risk factors versus the lowest, and then we were able also to document how support helped with behavioral improvement according to measurement on the family support scale. And so as you can see here, the low-risk kids actually started out a bit better with services, but did improve past our clinically significant cutoff score on the CBCL over time. And the high-risk started out a bit higher with behavioral symptomatology, but the high support group with high family supports, the children were actually able to get slightly better. This trend continues throughout the 12-month and 18-month follow-ups, but obviously our numbers decrease over time to termination. And so various subgroups of this have statistical significant differences when we analyze further out. So some of the challenges that we experienced, clinicians did give the feedback that given the high-risk population, that they felt that they were doing a lot of crisis and case management on a weekly basis with the families. And so in the grand context of these family emergencies that they needed to help with, administering standardized measures kind of sometimes fell to the wayside. Caregivers were sometimes hard to engage, and although we chose measures with a very low reading level, some still had difficulty and needed clinical assistance in filling out the measures, and so that took away from clinical time. Administratively, we weren't able to offer parents incentives for filling out the various measures, and we weren't able to anticipate actually the number of dropouts that we would have for services. I think that's just a factor of serving a very high-risk population. But we were able to analyze through this the different barriers to care, help patients with transport, and those sorts of things. So these became kind of our limitations in that all of the data we collected does not have a control group for comparison. And also we have no system or resources in place really to follow these dropouts. And so the results that we're seeing can be a bit biased. So this is what we need to work on in our future directions, coming up with some sort of budget and work to have a comparison group. We also just need to improve our follow-up rate and obviously do further analyses with all these measures of how the different outcomes interact with one another. And we'd just like to thank all the staff and clinicians at the Early Childhood Center for collecting this data on a daily basis.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.